welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K. as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
Hi, welcome to Create Your Best Life Ever. What else is possible with Allison J.K.? That's me. I'm so excited to get to the guest. I almost forgot to say me. With Bruce Lipton today, Dr. Bruce Lipton, I am so excited to have on. As my regular listeners know, we've been talking about the mind-body connection and the science behind it ever since this show started, and really using my experience in the 10 years in Asia and examining how it's really a science. It's really an entire system of energy and consciousness that flows throughout our bodies in the universe, way beyond just it being positive thinking and the law of attraction. And as we've had other scientists on, we have the benefit today of hearing about epigenetics and the work, the pioneering work that Dr. Lipton has done. Really, we're going to let you guys read the bio for the most part and just gain the most we can out of having the hour with Dr. Lipton. I do want to say that we're going to be talking about his latest book, The Honeymoon Effect, from Hay House. And it's going to be fun to listen about because it's a little bit of a different work than the first two bestsellers, Biology of Belief and Spontaneous Evolution, as you'll hear from him in just a minute, pointing to the importance of the subconscious belief. So as you, many of you know, I've started a new program because of the importance of clearing subconscious beliefs and the increasing demand for this work from me with the Theta Healing, the Tuesday night group calls. So go ahead and www.allisonjk. I'm going to give you guys a special offer. It's hit it on my website, /special offer. You get a month's worth of 4 weeks of Theta Healing sessions with me for the price of one. So with that having been said, let's talk about why subconscious beliefs are so important. So Dr. Bruce Lipton is with us, as you know, and he has a vast background. He actually was on the Human Genome Project. Suddenly my tongue isn't working. He has been a stem cell researcher. He has been a lecturer at medical schools for 20 years, and he's a biologist, considered one of the primary, I consider him to be the primary person responsible for the new biology field and one of the pioneers in the new sciences with epigenetics, really showing the science behind how our beliefs affect our bodies, health, and vitality. And now with the Honeymoon Effect, his new book is talking about how our beliefs affect what shows up as our relationships. So we have a lot to learn. Let's welcome him on, y'all. Hi, sir.
Hello. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you and your wonderful audience. I so appreciate this.
We are so excited to have you here. What are you doing as a biologist talking about belief?
Well, it was certainly a long stretch from my beginning as a guy so focused on genes and proteins and biochemistry and biology as just a mechanism. It was a long, interesting history that changed for me one day when I saw all that stuff that I studied was not really the value of the science that I was teaching medical students, that I realized I was teaching them incorrect information. And in fact, when I started to recognize that, I had tenure at the University of Wisconsin where I was teaching medical students, and I walked out because I just realized that I was teaching the curriculum, but my research on cells revealed that that curriculum concept, the philosophy that medical students was getting about life was wrong, and I left. And since that time, guess what? The new science has come out that has fully documented everything I've been talking about for 25 years now, so I'm very excited by that.
Yay!
There's a new science that's called behavioral epigenetics, and basically says your life experiences and your social consequences profoundly shape your genetics and your health, which is like, yeah, it's called Biology of Belief.
Yeah, which is your first book.
Yes.
Yeah, so are they getting taught this curriculum as of yet?
It's just being introduced, so and the problem is that to really take over in the medical field, almost, you know, you have to get this large, massive audience to finally agree and say, yes, we accept that. And so, and the problem with getting that across the audience is that it's a basic science change, not like a pharmaceutical science or a clinical science change. It's so basic that really future physicians will be more grounded in this science. Current physicians, it's really hard for them to go back and do the basics and reconsider that maybe the whole foundation, the way they've been practicing, is really not correct. It takes me back to a time that, look, there was physicists here, and they were all Newtonian physicists. They all had classical physics about the physical mechanical world, the primacy of the physical world, and they ignored all that invisible stuff. And then in 1925, the physicists at the leading edge all agreed there's a new physics. It's called quantum physics, and it emphasizes the energy, which was totally not even part of the Newtonian perception. And so there was this interesting part. It took years for the physics to you know, for the older ones to pass on, and the younger ones with the newer vision to step into their place. And with the change in genetics and epigenetics, to me, which is as profound a change as Newtonian to quantum physics was, we have to slowly let the new people bring this in and start manifesting a new healthcare system based on epigenetics, as the old genetics group starts to, you know, become eliminated from the field because of age. Don't tell
eliminated.
I
was wondering, you know, I'm still a newbie compared to you in voicing this out there, and I'm just wondering, like, in my book I said the exact same thing, except for the when they disappear. Because I'm saying that you say in one of your lectures that we are at a pivot point as the old way of health based on Newtonian physics leaves and a new way of health enters based on quantum physics and based on, I'm adding in now what you just said, epigenetics. So why is this pivot point so difficult?
Well, the difficult part is, and I'll tell you, it's actually the outside influences on healthcare, not the actual practitioners and education of healthcare. It's been totally influenced by the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical sells chemicals. And if you come up with a healing that says you don't need chemicals, you could do it with thoughts and energy, and all of a sudden it's like they say, yeah, right. You know, they can't. If they could put energy in a capsule, we'd have that healing here today. But it is not something you can commercially sell. And so the pharmaceutical industry has no interest in supporting or acknowledging even the nature of the new science, because it completely undermines their business plan. Because healing doesn't require medication and drugs. It really requires a change in consciousness and thoughts, and the world of our beliefs have to be changed. And so pharmaceutical industry is pretty much antagonistic to it, and yet they hold the purse strings on medical programming and training.
So what you're saying, you also say in another lecture, the number one cause of death in America is, you want to take over?
Okay. You ready? Okay. The number one cause of death in America is something called iatrogenic illness. And it's very interesting, because that sounds like, oh, wow, that's really, what's that, something tropical or something? No. iatrogenic illness is an illness as a result of medical treatment. Basically, it says a patient goes into the doctor with problem A, gets a treatment, and then has issues or dies from problem B, which is the result of the treatment. And it turns out that when the statistics are compiled, the American Medical Association acknowledges iatrogenic illness as the third leading cause of death. So the medical profession themselves recognizes that they are the third leading cause of death, but they base that on what are called conservative estimates. And a man by the name of Gary Null and a team of medical doctors said, wait, instead of estimates, let's put all of the statistics in and compile it. And when they did that, iatrogenic illness was not the third leading cause of death. It actually became the first leading cause of death, which leads us to a very, you know, a logical question at some point.
Right.
That, the healing industry is the leading cause of death. Might be something wrong there. I think there is. And we're awakening to it, but the problem is most of it is mediated by the pharmaceutical and petrochemical industry, and they're interested in money. They're not really interested in healing. If you heal people and there's no more drugs to be sold, they would be very upset.
Well, then we'd have to come up with new ways to get money.
Exactly, but I would just love to see them disappear from the picture altogether, and that would be really great. And the fact is this, is that because the new biology and the new physics really say that trying to heal yourself with these chemical drugs is actually not just inefficient, but is actually quite destructive of the system, primarily because of a lack of understanding how biology actually works. So we're left with an old belief that is the conceptual belief of most people, the stuff that kids are learning in school today, an old belief that genes and DNA are the controlling factor of our lives. That's what most of the established people have been programmed with. That's even what, as I said, the kids today are still being programmed with that. And it turns out to be completely false, because the concept that genes control things is a fallacious, totally faulty belief system from the get-go, for a very simple reason. A gene, and this is strictly what a gene is, it's a blueprint to make the protein parts of the body. So the proteins are like the building blocks that you assemble cells, and then cells assemble into people. So the building blocks of creating a cell are proteins, and the DNA is a blueprint to make the protein. And why that becomes relevant, because look at the world we're in, where you say, oh yeah, DNA turns on and off, DNA controls this, and DNA causes that. And it turns out all those statements are wrong when you recognize a simple fact. DNA is a blueprint. And I say, what's relevant about that? I say, well, go into an architect's office, and she's working on a blueprint, and you lean over her shoulder, and you casually ask, you say, is your blueprint on or off? And she'll look at you like, what are you, crazy? It's like a blueprint. There's no on and off. And I go, precisely. DNA does not have an on and off. It's a blueprint. What you really want to know is who's reading the blueprint. Blueprints have to be read before they're engaged. So it's not the blueprint turning itself on and off. It's the reader of the blueprint that picks the blueprints, picks the genes, and adjusts the genes to create life. That reader, so-called reader, it turns out to be the nervous system and specifically the mind. And this is a switch from the old story of genetics, where genes turn on and off and genes control things, turning out, okay, that was wrong. The belief is totally wrong. Genes don't control, turn on or off, or et cetera. Genes are selected and read by the nervous system and under the influence of the mind. And so this is profoundly important for this reason, for the audience to understand. If I tell you genes control your life, which is what it says in the books and all that kind of stuff, then you recognize this. As far as you know, you didn't pick the genes you came with. And if you don't like the traits you have, you can't just go and say, oh, okay, I'm going to change my genes. And all of a sudden you start to realize your life is controlled by these genes, and you have no control over the genes. And that belief creates the concept of victim. Like I'm a victim of my heredity, and so basically the old science of victim takes power away from people. The new science of epigenetics, where the mind is responsible for reading the DNA, is an empowerment biology, because you can change your mind and you can control your biology. So you're not a victim of your genes; you're a master of your genes. Are you still there?
And that's a little bit challenging. Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Got so quiet that maybe it was thinking time for a second.
Yeah, I'm off in the corner thinking. I'm like,
Well, yeah, so why this is important because we program people to be victims of their genes. So, oh, there's cancer in their family, Alzheimer's, diabetes, whatever you want. You say, oh, my God, I'm in the family. I could be recipient of that gene, and my life will now be totally, controlled by this gene. So something like Angelina Jolie has that belief, or still has that belief, of course, that she has this gene that causes cancer and therefore went through a radical mastectomy to avoid the cancer, but that's based on the belief that the genes cause the cancer, and the genes don't cause cancer. Genes are influential, but they themselves do not cause cancer. It's really more lifestyle and belief that ultimately controls the cancer. And yet she believes that genes control her life. She believes that BRCA gene that she has, is going to give her cancer. And because she so firmly believes in that, she left herself no alternative but to have a mastectomy and say the only way out is to remove the tissue. But then this was based on a belief that genes control things. And it's unfortunate because there's another understanding, a new belief that reveals it's how the mind operates that really determines whether the cancer is going to occur or not.
Okay, so why is that? I talk about this a lot and all over my platform, Bruce. Why is it such a strongholded position beyond, I think I just made up a word, strongheld position, beyond the pharmaceutical motives, the average everyday person in our textbooks still having, in the textbooks the old way, why does our society hang on to the physical having more power? What is so threatening about
well,
the two-way?
It's basically we got manipulated with a belief system. We are programmed with beliefs. So when we're young, the mind is in a functioning state, especially before age 7, to download things that we hear or experience and just make behavioral programs from them. So if we, as young people, hear that genes and heredity are in charge of our lives, then our brain downloads that. Then we operate from the belief that genes control who we are. And then all I have to tell you is, well, you have a gene that's going to cause cancer, and you have a belief that genes control you. You put those two together, and you do something like Angelina Jolie. You say, oh, my God, I can't stop it, so I'm going to cut out the tissue. And it turns out, but that's a belief. And since belief is so powerful, it controls our life. You know, here's an interesting fact. Just how powerful is belief? Well, first, a simple example is this. If I hypnotize you and tell you I'm going to touch you with a burning cigarette, and I just touch you with the tip of my finger, in 30 seconds, you're going to have a full-out blister with a wheel and flare, the redness and all that. The whole thing turns into as you actually just got burned. But the fact was you didn't get burned. I touched you with my finger. I said, well, where did the burn come from? Where did the blister come from? The answer was the belief that it was a burning cigarette led the system to make a response to form a blister to that, even though it wasn't a burning cigarette. How powerful is the mind? It created a blister when there was no reason for one. And then you say, well, that's pretty powerful. I go, look, most of us out there are associated with something called the placebo effect. Yes, the placebo effect is a belief that a certain drug or a certain modality is the special thing that's going to heal me. I take this drug, and then I get better, but only find out later that the drug was a sugar pill. I'm left with a very important, point here, and the question is, well, what healed me? And the answer was, the sugar pill? No, the sugar pill didn't heal you. It was your belief that healed you. And so the pill was just to support your belief. Well, people talk about the placebo effect, and we have to recognize this. Science recognizes the placebo effect is responsible for somewhere between one-third to two-thirds of all medical healing. In other words, it wasn't the drugs, it wasn't the medical manipulation, it was the anticipation that going through this process was going to heal me. So up to two-thirds of all healing had nothing to do with the process or the chemistry, but everything to do with the belief. And so people say, yes, I know, I heard about that belief stuff, that placebo, and I go, cool. But what you don't emphasize, and to me is more critical because it's not talked about, is that when we talk about placebo effect, we're talking about the consequence of having a positive belief. Yes, this pill is going to make a positive impact on my health. Great. And I say, but what about a negative belief? And it turns out a negative belief, which in science leads to what is called the nocebo effect, the negative belief is equally powerful to a positive belief, but the result goes in the opposite direction. So here's the point. A positive belief can heal you. A negative belief can kill you. And why this is important is because we never talk about what's the consequence of negative beliefs. And I say, well, we should talk about it, since psychologists tell us up to 70% of our programming is negative and disempowering and self-sabotaging. And then all of a sudden you start to realize, well, you mean those beliefs can influence my health? I go, absolutely. So powerfully that now there's a fact from psychologists. The American Psychological Association released an understanding up to 90% of doctor visits is only due to stress. It's just stress. Nothing more than that. No organic illness, no physical problems. It's just 90% of doctor visits are due to stress, which is an issue of belief. And all of a sudden you start to realize, oh, my God, we think of everything as medical. As, oh, there's something wrong with the body. The cells are broken. The DNA is mutated or whatever. And we blame the body. When it turns out, the body is responsible, issues in the body are responsible for less than 10% of health issues. 90% of health issues or more are due to lifestyle and our beliefs. So we've been focusing on the medical profession to come and heal us, when really we should be focusing on psychology and belief change as a source of healing.
So you say, you guys, some of you may want to go listen to that section again. And there's a lot of different directions I could go with what you just said. And the direction I'm going to choose to go is, you say, which direction are you thinking, positive or negative? Your physiology follows the direction of your thinking.
Absolutely. Just like when I said, like the blister. The blister is a negative belief that, oh, my God, I just got burned. The fact is you didn't get burned, but you believed it under hypnosis, and as a result, the belief manifests the blister. Well, that was a blister. How about a belief in cancer? Oh, it will manifest in exactly the same way. And this is why it becomes so critical for us to get out of the old programming, because the old programming is the programming that you are powerless over the control of your health, when in fact it's completely the opposite of that, because the new science of epigenetics reveals how the mind and our perception of the environment actually control our biology. And the significance is simple. If it's your mind or your perceptions that control your biology, then think about it this way. You are free to change your mind and free to change your perceptions, which all of a sudden means, oh, well, then you can change your health by changing your consciousness. The answer is absolutely.
So what happens when somebody who's listening to you is so steeped in the old paradigm where my mind doesn't affect my body, or maybe it does, but I look at all of this science that's out there that's disturbing me, saying don't pay attention to your nutrition because nutrition doesn't matter.
Excuse me, I had to make that squawky sound. The nutrition doesn't matter. It's like a lot of people say that. Of course, that's the part that goes, go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted. I was shocked for a second.
So I do the same thing. I welcome more of a reaction from you, actually. Go for it, because it is ludicrous. I mean, living in Asia amongst the Chinese and the Thais and the Indians, I mean, so much of the food, a little bit different now that they're modernized, so much of the food is they're eating for health. It's not for taste. If taste can be included, woohoo, but it's more for eating medicinally. I mean, I don't eat for taste.
It's interesting, because a simple fact is this. People will spend more money on taking care of the nutrition of their pets than they will take taking care of themselves. That's a fact. It's like, oh, my God, they take care of pets and they don't realize your cells are your pets. They're running you.
Yeah.
You are yourselves. If you don't take care of yourselves, it'd be like not taking care of your pets. Oh, well, that's where the issues come from.
Bruce, I have this awareness I would love to get your feedback on. When I'm doing energy healings with clients on the table and I'm working on their bodies, and let's say I'm working on a part that is either like an athletic injury or chronic pain or even a tumor, the cells around the part of the tumor, for example, they can be like, the, so it's not the tumor, but the cells in another part of the body where there's health, they can be, they feel to me like kindergartners. And the area that I'm sensing where the tumor is feels like it's just pissed off, or it's really a high electrical charge. Do you have anything?
You mean about the tumor cells affecting the other cells?
No, I mean like the feeling of healthy cells that I've experienced as an energy healer is that they feel like kindergartners.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, kindergartners is when we didn't have the mind driving us to in the programs that we received, all the negative programs that we received, because everybody wakes up every day. Look, the fundamental cultural belief in the civilization that we live in is a Darwinian belief about evolution. And that the phrase that is inevitably comes up because science shapes our culture. What, you know, if science says this is true, then we make a belief and a behavior based on that scientific truth. We buy from Darwinian theory that life is a struggle for existence with a competition for fitness. What does that mean? It means like our culture is designed to go out there and fight and struggle and go through all this. Well, and a child is not yet affected by that. And that's why children are so much healthier and they're more vibrant and they're more capable of being flexible and changing and resistant to kinds of illness. But once we get into a mindset of our being victims and being out of control, that's when we lose the health that we have or and we're endowed with. And it's very interesting because when we look at a cancer, we've always in our conventional world said, oh, my God, cancer genes and cancer cells. And, you know, we don't talk about people. We talk about the cells and stuff like that. It's like, no, wait, the cells are responding to the consciousness. It's very interesting. When people look in the mirror and see themselves as a single individual human entity, I say, well, you're a human, but by definition, a human is a community of 50 trillion cells. The living parts of our human body are the cells. The human, by its nature, is a community of 50 trillion cells. And this becomes important as your first basis of understanding health in this regard. The fate of a cell is dependent on the action of the nervous system for a very important reason. When cells are living alone by themselves, like an amoeba going through the environment, it reads the environment, and it adjusts its biology to meet the needs or demands of the environment. But the amoeba is directly reading the environment and adjusts its biology. And I go, well, yeah, but you're made out of like 50 trillion amoebas. But here's the problem. let's say, well, that's true. And I have, let's say I have a liver with, you know, a few billion cells in there, 100 billion or 200 billion cells or whatever of liver. And I say, well, liver, just like an amoeba, the cells have to adjust themselves to the environment. And I go, does the liver actually know what the environment is? It's stuck in the middle of you. How does it know what the environment is? And the answer is, it takes the information from the nervous system to and trusts the nervous system to read the environment and send the correct information so that the cells adjust appropriately to the environment. So the liver cell is actually not touching the environment, but depending on the nervous system to communicate. Well, here's the problem. You could live in the most healthy environment of all, but if you perceive it not to be healthy, then the signals that get to the liver are not that the environment's healthy. The liver is just going to read what the nervous system says. It says, oh, it's scary out there. It's, you know, it's a struggle for existence out there. And basically then the cells adjust to that belief, and they're now not adjusted to the real world. So if I get you to believe that you're sick, nocebo effect. I diagnose you and say, oh my God, you got this disease. You're going to, in 6 weeks, you're going to start to die. And if you believe that, your nervous system will send information to your cells. And in 6 weeks, the time clock will come and say, okay, this is now the time we start dying. And the belief will cause the death of the cells. So the diagnosis that you get in a large part becomes programming via your nervous system to control your biology. This is where part of that iatrogenic illness comes in. People, if they believe they have a cancer, can generate a cancer or even die without the cancer if they believe that. And so we have to start to recognize there's more to our biology and health than genes and chemistry. As a matter of fact, they are at the lower level of control. The higher level of control is consciousness, mind, and the programming that we receive. And the beautiful part about that, once you emphasize it, is, yeah, but those things that are controlling, consciousness, mind, programming, those could all be changed. And if they can be changed, that means then we're not victims of those things. We can come from a state of a lack of health and change our beliefs and heal ourselves. That's something called like a spontaneous remission, where a person is completely dying of cancer. Everybody believes a person is dying of cancer. The doctor tells them they're dying of cancer. They go through a change, which almost is always a profound change in belief, and all of a sudden the cancer's gone. It's like, where the heck did the cancer go? They change their belief, and their cells change. They're very powerful. And this is what we have to learn, because we have to come out of the programming, which is completely opposite, and that is, you're very weak. You're very, you know, vulnerable. You're frail. This is the story we get. It's the farthest thing from the truth. But if you believe it, and then the mind sends the information that the neurological communications, hormones and regulators and all that stuff from the brain into the blood, the belief is translated into chemistry, which in turn controls the cells. So a negative belief leads to negative chemistry, which leads to ill health, and vice versa when it comes to positive beliefs.
Bruce, that's the turning point that we're in from the Newtonian physics into the quantum physics age, in the new science age, where it's based on consciousness as primary and energy as primary, as opposed to the physical matter taking precedent.
This is what we have to get out of, because this is why the drug industry keeps selling drugs. People believe in it. But the fact is this, if you look at the treatment from drugs, there are very few drugs that are actually helpful. There are some drugs that are helpful. I'm not going to say all drugs are bad, but my God, the majority of drugs are not very useful at all. As a matter of fact, in the statistics on iatrogenics, 350,000 people die from taking prescription drugs. And it's like, man, if there was a street drug where 350,000 people died, the government will have the army out to find those culprits, and yet 350,000 people die from taking prescription drugs, and everybody goes, oh, that's the cost of medicine. It's like, what?
Yeah, when I was away from here for the 10 years, I left 2 months before 9/11 and came back 2 years into Obama's first administration. There was a buildup of pharmaceutical drug commercials on TV. So I was watching TV one night after being here for about 6 months, and I had become more grounded back into America. And I was assessing as I was watching TV, and I could not believe the list of side effects for the drugs, and that anybody would, in their right mind, risk all the side effects just for the one effect the drug's supposed to have.
This is always a shock to me, because they tell you right up front. But there's a little euphemism. They call it side effects. I'm going to tell you from a biochemical, cellular, biological thing, that word is not correct. They're not side effects. They're direct effects of taking these drugs. And it's just so hard, because people are so bought into, well, this is the way you do medicine. You must take these drugs because that's the way we grew up. And then you find out, you know, lots of people get sick from these drugs. Yeah, but you got to take these drugs. And that's a belief system. So that's why the sugar pills are so much better, because it allows them to think they took the drug but not have any of the negative drug, and they got better with a placebo effect. And it's interesting, because things like Prozac, it's one of the biggest selling drugs in the world. And in the scientific laboratory tests, Prozac is no more effective than a sugar pill. It's basically a very advanced placebo, because it doesn't really do what they say it does. It's primarily a manifestation of a placebo. And this becomes so critical when you think, it's like, how many billions of dollars are spent daily on Prozac when it's the same as sugar?
I know. How else could that money be used? Bruce, you said
absolutely. You know, and it's unfortunate, because, if I have a moment, and I will get on the soapbox right now, is this very simple understanding. There's a word human and humane and humanity. They all have the same root. The same root is that human part, which is by definition compassion. And why is that relevant? Well, we're supposed to be compassionate. And I say, well, is medicine compassionate? And I have to say, it's absolutely not compassionate. In fact, it's inhumane. You go, well, that's like, medicine is inhumane. I go, well, yeah, look at it this way. To be compassionate means if somebody's sick, you're supposed to help them. I said, well, how does the medical profession work? I said, well, they make a profit off of sick people. I said, wait a minute. You make money from people being sick? They go, yeah. I said, how do you make money from people being sick? And the answer is, well, you charge them more than the services you provide. And I go, well, wait a second. Here's a person who's sick, and we're supposed to be compassionate, and what you do is you're kicking them while they're down. Not only are they sick, but now you're going to try to rip off a profit for them. 60% of bankruptcies in the United States, 60% of bankruptcies in the United States are due to people who got behind on medical bills. That means that medical treatment has, they've lost their house, their, you know, retirement, everything they saved for. For what? The compassionate process of healing? That had nothing to do with it. It was how much money they can make off of you. And so, by definition, the way we practice medicine today is inhumane because it lacks compassion. And compassion is the fundamental root of humane. And so what's the issue? And the answer is, once you made medicine a for-profit industry, yep, then it was no longer humane anymore. And that's why it should be a non-profit industry.
It was such a different backdrop, excuse me. It was such a different backdrop living in a country with socialized medical care. There was this whole element of fear and greed not present.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the fear, as I said, is well-founded because, look, people can't even afford to buy health insurance. And then they're, like, scared to death. Like, why? Well, if 60% of people are losing their homes and their savings and everything because of medical bills, you can bet a lot of people are thinking, oh, my God, if I get sick, what's going to happen? And right away, that fear alone is a foundation for causing illness.
But we're talking about having health insurance for a system that we've talked about on this show and other shows in my book is proven to be dysfunctional. It's the number one killer when the stats are looked at accurately without denial.
I know. Isn't that fun? Meaning, it's not fun for the people who got screwed with it, but it's kind of funny when you actually do look at the statistics that are there and recognize, for example, cancer patients have a far better prognosis in life when they don't go for treatment as compared to those cancer patients that do go for treatment. You mean it's better and healthier to not go to a doctor when you have cancer, and the statistics reveal that to be true. And that's not true for all cancers. They're very specific things. But in general, the statistics of the health and welfare of cancer patients is far better when they don't seek medical treatment.
Bruce, you say something in one of the talks that you gave in New Zealand about holistic health care for cancer. You say there's a control that's higher than the cells. Treatments for cancer haven't changed since the 1930s. There's alternative solutions to treating cancer. Things have changed.
Absolutely. And the significance about that cancer change is, as I said, look, you know, with all the money, billions and billions of dollars that have gone into cancer, as you mentioned, so you've invested billions of dollars, 50 years, and I say, well, what are you doing for treating cancer? Well, we're doing radiation and chemo poisoning. I go, this is exactly the same as it was in 1930. And the effectiveness is just about as good as it was in the 1930s. And so the whole idea is this. It's called the cancer industry. And it's very, very critical to recognize that the amount of money that the industry makes by pulling people into the system and then and not healing them, but sort of holding on to them and actually slowly poisoning them. I'll tell you a simple truth. If you don't have cancer and you go through chemotherapy, it'll get you sick and can kill you. Well, hell, that's if a healthy person takes chemotherapy. What about a person with cancer? It's like, well, they're already behind the eight ball before they even did the cancer therapy. So they're not going to get really any better with a lot of that. Very little bit of healing. And it's the interesting thing is this. Well, okay, chemotherapy, maybe one round might help stall the cancer a little bit. But every successive round of chemotherapy, what happens is the first hit of chemotherapy gets a large population of cancer cells out of the way. The next time you do chemotherapy, well, you don't have as many cancer cells, but guess what? Chemotherapy doesn't distinguish between cancer cells and normal stem cells, which are necessary to replace the hundreds of billions of cells that die every day in your body.
Hold on. Excuse me. What about the new drugs that they're claiming know how to distinguish?
Well, they're not fully developed yet. Some of them are claiming that, and I'm still waiting, you know. So there's been a great story about that. But it's, as I said, in the overall cancer statistics, that's why a cancer patient has to look at their particular cancer and look at the statistics, okay? That's what it was a really clear point. There are some cancers that there's some influence over. The vast majority of cancers are still being treated in the exact same way, the old way, and don't really respond any better to it than no treatment at all. Matter of fact, no treatment at all is frequently better. And the best treatment of all is the kind of work that you do, Allison, and that is basically recognize that less than 10% of cancer is actually connected by heredity. 90% of cancer is directly associated with lifestyle and belief systems. So the treatment for cancer, rather than going to the heredity part, which means, oh, affecting the chemistry and the DNA and the genes, the effective treatment for almost all cancer, 90% of cancer, is changing lifestyle and beliefs. That's where the problem comes from. So, but then again, there's no pharmaceutical drugs that get involved, so that's not an interest. Medicine approaches everything as from the physical end because it's being guided by the pharmaceutical industry. It's being the funds are being directed by the industry itself, the pharmaceutical industry. So are the funds seeking health and cure? And then you only have to ask a simple logical question. The health industry is a for-profit-based corporation, and I don't care if they're making health or widgets. A corporation's primary function, no matter what the corporation does, the primary function by the nature of what a corporation is to make a profit for the shareholders. And so basically, then the function of medicine is to make a profit. And I said, well, what would happen if you healed people? And then the answer would be, well, then the corporation wouldn't make any money. I go, yeah, well, that's where the problem is. Because if the corporation is designed to make money, then providing actual healing would be a detriment to the nature of the corporation. So guess what? Corporations, profit people, they're making money hand over fist. The country is going bankrupt because of the health care costs. And I say, hey, you spent all of this money on health care, and how do we stand in the world in regard to health? And the answer is the U.S. is one of the lowest levels of health of the westernized nations on this planet, and we spend the most money. And all of a sudden, you better get the idea. Money does not necessarily mean healing. More money has sustained the healing system to keep people from being healed, but keeping them plugged in like an umbilical cord into the pharmaceutical industry to keep it going. This is what we have to change this, and it's not in the interest of the industry to heal you because it's counter to the directive of a corporation.
Bruce, there's a couple of responses that I have that I would love your feedback on. One, halfway through my time overseas, I came back to help my mother who got diagnosed with a brain tumor that was supposed to kill her within 3 months. I used energy healing and the work with her beliefs, and we got the brain tumor shrunk, wiped out. The people at the local cancer center called her a miracle case. Years later, so I go back to my overseas position to Taiwan and at an international school, still doing the part-time energy healing. And years later, when I'm home again one summer, she has a seizure, the first one in my arms. And the holistic understanding of seizure is the body readjusting itself with the electrical wiring. The energy healing deals with the electrical wiring. It deals with the central nervous system. The chi or prana that we're working with is electric, as you know, and magnetic. So it's shifted her system electrically, and she had a seizure in order to have her entire system readjust. However, the Western diagnosis was they couldn't make out the cloudiness in the MRI at the emergency room, so they were guessing there was a brain tumor, and I said, it's not. I mean, I spent a couple of different times fighting with the doctors over MRI interpretations all the way to the end. She got put on anti-seizure medication. I knew, looking at the doctor's different three desk references from the nurses at the ICU unit, that the side effects were going to take her spirit. That they were the exact kinds of side effects that make the ego pull in, make the introversion happen, and antisocial behaviors and not have a spirit or courage. I mean, they're listed right there. So it is ultimately what took her. And she died of, in my opinion, she did not die of a brain tumor, and they never were able to successfully say that is a brain tumor that came back and caused a seizure and caused her to eventually die. She stayed on the anti-seizure medication, lost her will to live, and stopped talking, and that's ultimately what took her. So,
that's an iatrogenic illness live right there.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. And it's interesting because my mother died this last year. And she was on these drugs and I noticed that she was just, you know, she was getting foggy, she was repeating herself, she lost an interest in life, and she it was just downhill, and she started to, you know, like she started dying. So they said, okay, we're going to call hospice, and hospice comes in and says, okay, well, at this point we stop the medication. They stopped the medication. Guess what? She got bright, alive. Well, she was reading books again, and she got all excited about life. The medication was killing her, and the whole idea was that the moment they took her off it is the moment she started to regain control over her life again.
Yeah, I know. I lost my mother when she started taking that medication. Not even with the brain tumor, or in the one time she did almost die in the first years before they took a year, about 8 months of energy healing to reduce the brain tumor to nothing. During that time, she almost died due to liver failure from the chemo. And the doctors at the hospital told my father and I we should look into hospice. And I looked at him and I said, you don't know who you're talking to. You don't know what's been done to her. No. And we got, with energy healing treatments, my Reiki master and I went to the hospital every day and worked on rebalancing her liver and her central nervous system. She got out of the hospital and got better. And my dad wanted a second round of chemo, and I was like, no. And the only way that I agreed with it, my dad was responsible for the Western end, and I was doing the natural healing end, and my mom wanted both of us there, apparently, because we were. And we worked together as a team for her best interest. And so the second round of chemo was only with a nurse registering, measuring every day her liver enzyme levels to make sure that she wasn't starting to go down again because of the chemo. And in fact, within days of the second round starting, yes, her liver started to go into failure again. The enzyme started going up because she couldn't handle the chemo. So that is, yes, what we're talking about here with the industry. And I want to take it into another level because I know that I hear frequently from people in my family, not necessarily my clients, because my clients are already basically understanding, but in my extended family, I know that they're saying, but if I don't believe in the energy healing working, then doesn't that mean that I should take the drugs?
Well, if you believe in the drugs, then you have to take the drugs. It's like Angelina Jolie in the mastectomy. If she totally believes, like she did, that she was going to get cancer, if she didn't do the mastectomy, then the mastectomy was required because her belief system would have immediately kicked in and said, oh, my God, I'm getting the cancer. I didn't do the mastectomy. So doing that is, you know, in her mind. So you have to follow your belief. And that's where the placebo comes in. Remember, the placebo effect is the belief that this treatment is going to heal you, and the treatment could be a sugar pill. But when you're actually doing the placebo with real drugs, you're getting the placebo effect to a certain degree, but you're also then mixing in all those side effects, which are announced, which means they become part of your consciousness. Oh, my God, if I take this drug, look at these side effects. And that part becomes part of your belief as well. So it's a real tough call, because if somebody totally believes that this is what it's going to take to heal them, then by all means, that's the thing that's going to be the closest bet for their healing, as opposed to something that might be much more healthy to do. They would selecting that is better because their consciousness is encouraging that. And I just want to add, you know, I really should add this because this, you know, very negative on the medical thing, but let me acknowledge something about medicine that's very important, and that is this. Medicine does miracles in trauma. If it's physical, cutting out something, sewing up something, replacing something, medicine does miracles. But when it comes to functional things, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, these kind of things, they're not really good at that, but the physical is really good at it, really good at. So I don't want to say, okay, throw away medicine. Medicine does miracles, but not in the things that we're talking about, where there are functional illnesses, because they have a span of understanding of the mechanisms of cells And while they're changing the education, all the conventional doctors that are out there now have been programmed with beliefs that are totally faulty, how life and how cells work, and that's why their effectiveness is not as good.
Yeah, Bruce, I say we're so on the same page. I say the same exact thing in my book, reviewing the World Health Organization and Harvard Medical School study about all the industrialized healthcare systems and finding ours, the only thing that we're known to be strong at is trauma. And I say that frequently, too, not just in my book, because of what you just said, we're based on the physical. I'd like to move, though, into the what you say about, because when I'm working with a client who has somewhat belief in energy healing, is open to it, but is more steeped and has more time spent in the use of medications, and they start, even if they don't necessarily fully believe in it, and they're kind of half and half, let's say, once they start changing their energy, their feeling is lighter, emotions and thoughts are more gravitating towards the positive, their nutrition's changed, so let's say they're using spirulina, so they have more vitality and they have less sugar cravings. As they see the results happening more, it gives them more confidence, and then the belief gets created. So I start to change what I've been observing. I've started to change in the last couple of years. I don't know that people necessarily need to believe in the energy healing because I still see it working.
Well, you know, the problem is this. When we talk about belief, we have two minds that are, you have to ask the question about belief in both of those minds, because it depends on which minds have that belief. So we have the conscious mind and we have the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind's got programs in it. The conscious mind is creative, and that's where positive beliefs can come from, because if I ask you what you want from your life, your creative answer, which is a positive answer, comes from the conscious mind. The subconscious mind is more or less habitual. But the issue about belief, about the medications, et cetera, you have to ask both the conscious and the subconscious mind. The significance is, since the subconscious mind is programmed before we're 7 years of age, the beliefs we get in the first 7 years of life are actually the programs in the subconscious, and they run the show 95% of the time. So I go to a conventional person raised in a conventional family, and I say, tell me about your health things. And they say, well, go back to when you were a kid. And I say, oh, yeah, when anybody was sick, when mommy was sick, she had to go to the doctor. When daddy's sick, he had to go to the doctor. When Billy's sick, he has to go to the doctor. When I'm sick, I have to go to the doctor. So I say, oh, subconscious program says this. When you are not well, you have to go see a professional, the doctor. And it's kind of a joke because it never said the doctor had to do anything. It says you have to go to the
doctor. Yeah, so.
and this becomes relevant in a minute. I'll explain it. And I say, well, okay, so that's subconscious belief that the doctor controls your health, and that disempowers you because it says you have no control over your health. Doctor has to do it. The conscious mind can have all the great awareness and new ideas and creative insights and say, oh my God, yes, I could change my belief, all this, and I don't need the medication. And I go, that's really good. So that's the conscious mind with creative belief about what you're feeling about energy healing. Conscious mind goes, yeah, oh, that's really cool. And then I go, well, here's the problem. The conscious mind only controls life 5% of the time, and the subconscious controls it 95% of the time. So when you ask the question about your belief in energy healing, if the conscious mind says, yes, I believe in it, then that's cool, except that it only works 5% of the time. And the subconscious mind, almost inevitably, if it was programmed in a conventional regular family, actually has the belief that the doctor controls your health. And as a result, whatever the doctor says becomes your truth. That's why diagnosis becomes a problem thing, because if the diagnosis is negative, but your subconscious buys it as truth, it will manifest it as a reality. So if the doctor says, oh, you're going to die in 3 months, and the subconscious has the belief that the doctor controls health and takes care of you, that statement from the doctor will actually cause the subconscious mind to set a 3-month time limit and then turn the system off so that
That's
we can
true.
Die from that belief. So the question is, when a patient says, oh, the energy medicine is, you know, I really am into it, and I have to find out, well, is that your conscious belief or your subconscious belief? And it makes a difference, because if it's your conscious belief, probably won't have much of an effect on your life. If it's your subconscious belief, because it controls you 95% of the time, you will manifest that belief. And I said, but the problem is, most of the subconscious belief has been programmed during childhood where health issues are actually turned over to the professional, the doctor, and our learning then says that anything about our health, the truth comes from that person, not from us. And so the conscious mind's contribution is virtually nothing, and the subconscious is running the show. So a person says, I believe in energy healing, may not have any effect at all if that belief is only in the conscious mind.
Bruce, a big bolt of lightning. I'm in Tampa, Florida, and it's St. Pete, Clearwater area, and
yes,
it's considered the lightning capital of the world. And a big bolt of lightning just happened, as you just said that. I say it's interesting because I have progressively started doing theta healing reprogramming of people's beliefs that they can't heal this. So addressing that subconscious belief. And just coming over to your statement in the honeymoon effect, where you apply the way our beliefs affect our reality in action to love and how we are in relationships, you say we think we're acting out of the wishes. So this is when in interaction with within a couple. We think we're acting out of the wishes, desires, and aspirations of our conscious mind, but as soon as our conscious mind starts to drift off in thought, it stops paying attention to the current moment. That's when the programs of our subconscious mind kicks in. We start acting like our parents, and we don't even see it.
Yeah, and that's the undermining part of the relationship, because the subconscious programs, which are fundamentally the fundamental behavioral programs of the subconscious mind, downloaded before age 7 by observing our parents, our family, and our culture, this is where those beliefs come from. The conscious mind doesn't really begin kicking in until after age 7 as a predominant brain state. And the conscious mind has the creative part that's connected to you. And so basically it says this, when you're operating from the conscious mind, you're operating from wishes, desires, and aspirations. When you operate from the subconscious mind, you're operating from programs, and then emphasizing the nature that the fundamental programs are just derived not from your wishes and desires. They're derived from observing other people's behaviors and downloading their behavior. And so when you start the honeymoon, what they found out was so interesting is, look, you could have a crappy life right up until you meet this special person. And then you meet this special person, and guess what? The next days unfold. It's heaven on earth. You're in love. You're healthy. You've got energy. Life is so beautiful and everything. And we call this the honeymoon effect. And the thing was, well, how could life be so crummy and then all of a sudden be heaven on earth? The answer is, because we now know from a scientific point of view, is the moment you fall in love like that, you actually don't default to the subconscious programs, that your conscious mind stays in control, not 5% of the time, but 90 to 100% of the time. I say, why is that relevant? I say, well, the conscious mind has wishes and desires and aspirations. If it's in control only 5% of the time, then only 5% of the time are you moving toward where you want to go. But science has found that when you fall in love, it's the conscious mind that operates 90% or more of the time. That means then when the moment as you're being in love, you don't default to the subconscious. All your activities, your cognitive behavior, your decisions, all that is based on wishes and desires. So when two people are operating from their conscious minds in the beginning, called the honeymoon, both of them are manifesting wishes and desires, and lo and behold, hey, it's heaven on earth. And then I go, and then what happened? It disappears. And I say, well, when life gets busy and the conscious mind starts thinking, every time the conscious mind's thinking, it's not paying attention, so the default behavior shifts to the subconscious programs. That's when these behaviors that your parents downloaded into you, or your family downloaded into you, they begin to show up when the conscious mind gets busy. So I say, okay, the honeymoon was what? You're so in love, the conscious mind stays in the present moment. All decisions and behavior are controlled by wishes and desires, and manifestation is heaven on earth. But as you go down, life gets busy. Your conscious mind begins to wander in thought. As it begins to wander in thought, then we start playing the deep programs and the subconscious, which are other people's behaviors. And this is when the honeymoon starts to go crazy, because it's sort of like, well, where did this behavior come from?
Right.
This isn't a honeymoon. A honeymoon was all about winning. You know, I love it, because the most famous line of all is when your partner all of a sudden shifts into a subconscious, plays a behavior that was never part of the relationship because it's not in their conscious mind. It's programmed from their parents in the subconscious mind. And the line that I always love, because it just illuminates like with a neon light, is like, after this person expresses this formerly not played but now express subconscious negative behavior, the other person looks at them and goes, who are you? And basically what that statement is, where the hell did that behavior come from that was never part of the relationship? And it's not necessarily good behavior, which then means it really starts eroding as these behaviors that were hidden in the subconscious and didn't play all of a sudden start to show up because the conscious mind is getting too busy and now we're defaulting. These subconscious behaviors sabotage the honeymoon because they're not behaviors that necessarily represent any of your wishes or desires. And when you play them, you're playing them because you're not paying attention because the conscious mind is busy, which by definition means when you play your subconscious behaviors, you're the one that doesn't even see it. Because the only reason you're playing it is because the conscious mind is not paying attention, which by definition means it doesn't see it. So like in my lectures, I ask the audience, I say, look, go back to a time in your life. I know you were close to somebody as a friend. You knew their behavior intimately, and you happen to know their parent. And one day you recognize that your friend has some of the same behavior as their parent. So you volunteer very casually something like, hey, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And it's at that moment, Bill goes ballistic and says, how can you compare me to my dad? And I tell the audience, two profound, very profound points, same story. Profound point one, everybody else can see that Bill behaves like his dad. The only one who doesn't see it is Bill. The answer is simple. Because he downloaded the behavior before seven by observing his father, and that's a fundamental behavior in the subconscious. And when he plays that behavior, the reason why he's playing it is because his conscious mind's not paying attention. So when he's playing this negative behavior he got from his father, he's the only one that doesn't see it because he's playing it because he's not paying attention. And this is when the honeymoon starts to fall apart, as these negative behaviors that were programmed from other people start taking more and more of the action in the relationship as the is more and more engaged in thought. And this is when compromises must occur because, like, where the hell did that behavior come from? Now it's part of the relationship. What are you going to do with it? and your partner doesn't even see it, which is that's where the bigger problem comes from, because you accuse your partner and say, well, what kind of behavior is that? And then we go back to the story of Bill and recognize your partner didn't see that. Just like Bill didn't see he was playing his dad, your partner didn't see it and are completely, you know, taken back by how can you accuse them of being something negative when in their conscious mind that's not who they are. But the problem is at that moment that they're not playing the conscious mind, they're playing the subconscious program and not seeing it like Bill, and these sabotage the honeymoon and inevitably can cause it to come to an end.
And that you just explained the whole nature of why and how we sabotage ourselves. You guys, I am aware that we're going over time here, so I want to just wrap this up with saying that the honeymoon effect, you can continue to read about what he's saying in application to how we are in relationships. It's absolutely fascinating, and it's really fun to have Bruce Lipton's knowledge applied to love relationships, as you can see, as he just got started talking about here towards the end of what I knew was going to be a fascinating jam-packed hour. So I thank you, sir, for being with us and blessing us.
Oh, I am so sorry I ran out of time with you, because I always love giving this information out because it's so personally empowering. And it says if you've experienced the honeymoon effect, then you have to recognize it wasn't an accident, it wasn't a coincidence, it was actually a creation from the conscious mind. And the understanding is if you understand how you created with the conscious mind and you understand how the subconscious mind gets in the way, then you are free to change your life in such a way, as the book describes, is to have the honeymoon every day of your life for as long as you live. I'm only 18 years into the honeymoon right now with my partner, but this was after 17 years of avoiding all relationships after a troubled marriage and when I was very young. And I said to the universe, okay, I'll never do that again. And for 17 years, I had a mantra, I will never get married again. But once I understood the nature of the conscious and the subconscious, the programming, the interference, and all that, and the ability to reprogram the subconscious, and that's like your theta work, if your subconscious ends up, if you reprogram it and eliminate the negative programs and replace them with the wishes and desires of your conscious mind, and then think about it this way. you're having a honeymoon because you're operating from the conscious mind with wishes and desires, and you lose it when you shift into the subconscious. But if your subconscious ends up having the same behaviors as the conscious mind, then that means even if you're not paying attention, your behavior is still promoting the honeymoon, which means that you have the honeymoon whether you're paying attention or you're not paying attention, and it becomes automatic for the rest of your life to have that.
And you no longer sabotage yourself, which is the brilliance of it all. You have what you're saying, you consciously are saying you want to have.
Absolutely. And therefore, whether you're thinking about it or not, you're still playing the best behavior possible.
Bruce, I would love to have another hour with you, sir. I'd love to have a day with you. So that having been said,
we could set this up, and I would love to continue because I realize the shortness of the hour.
Excellent. Okay. Will do. Thank you.
Thank you, and I want to thank all those people out there because if we all get together and each live heaven on earth, then by definition the earth actually becomes heaven, and that's, I think, our destination.
BruceLipton.com. Look on the bottom right. You can see the link to his site, and you can learn more about all of us in a community of lightening up and raising the consciousness and having that be heaven on earth. We're wording it differently, but we're doing the same thing.
Yes.
Yes. Many, many blessings. Thank you. Thank you.
You're dear, Allison. Thank you so much.
You're a dear too, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.allisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.